This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Stay out of trouble, right? Like maybe die and get a decent job. Or live in one of these houses. Better homes for bigger assholes. Before you can buy one of these places, they check to make sure you're an asshole. It's a big market.
It is April 1988. The Last Emperor takes Best Picture at the Oscars. Leonard Part 6 wins Worst Picture at the Razzies. Celine Dion wins Eurovision for the Swiss. And Beetlejuice tops the box office for the whole month. Oh, Beetlejuice, why did that movie have to come up? It's been a whole day since your great betrayal and humiliation at the hands of Dennis from Second Period History, and apparently his girlfriend Angela. They stink. This whole thing stinks. How are you supposed to enjoy Billy Ocean's Get Out of My Dream, Get Into My Car when your dreams have been turned into nightmares? You're stuck. You're trapped, just like Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis. What can take your mind off all this? Is there anything out there that can soothe your soul? It's time to open up the second issue and see about that. Yes, it's time to
listen to Sassy.
Hey everybody.
Hello.
It's the pop culture issue. Time to talk about our pop culture lives of 1988 in April. I just have something brief, since Dave already brought up Last Emperor. I just, when I saw it, realized this was the first Oscars I can ever remember watching.
Was it because you were rooting for someone?
No, I just remember watching a little bit of it when my parents had it on, and any time The Last Emperor was nominated for anything, I just went, Last Emperor is going to win, and it did. It really swept a lot of categories.
Shared a gift from an early age, Ariana.
Yeah.
Call and win us from the get.
Now I don't care about the Oscars at all. I don't remember the last Oscars I watched. Literally, I can't. It's been years.
I remember being very angry the year that Bill Murray did not get nominated for Best Actor for Ghostbusters. And my dad was like, what? And I was like, he was amazing in it. And he was like, no, it's for real movies. And I was like, it isn't real movies.
You said, get out of my room.
It's like he didn't see. Oh, I was about to say didn't see him get a ghost blowjob, but that was Dan Aykroyd. So I'm sorry to Bill Murray and his great performance in Ghostbusters.
Sorry, but ghost blowjob is my new nickname. I'd like you guys to refer to me as GB for the rest of the episode.
Please welcome the umpteenth member of the Wu-Tang Clan, Ghost Blowjob.
She sucks. So I have to start with what I assume is the apology I'll keep doing for the rest of the episode, which is that I have fully placed myself in time. Maybe every second episode will be me going, of the issue going, now I know where I was. Because the first one, when we talk about topics in teen life, like we're just dealing with other people's issues. But then I think pop culture is where we really latch onto mine. And so Dave can edit out whatever he thinks is inappropriate. And I'll just do this because I don't have boundaries that are healthy, but I'm working on them. And that's what you need to know. So April of 1988, I didn't just turn 13. I turned 13. Had an actual surprise birthday party. Like it worked.
Oh.
Like the only time we went to a place we never go for dinner. My dad was not in town. My mom and my sister and I went somewhere, but I just remember I was wearing a short pink, like peach shirt and I was wearing like your comfy not to go to school jeans and mm-hmm. dancing with my sister outside the front door of the house going, doing the butt. Ow, sexy, sexy. Ain't nothing wrong if you want to do the butt. Open the door all night. Surprise! My mom had assembled a surprise 13 birthday party for me where my best friends were, their band played in my backyard. They had made a flyer for it. This was all because 2 days later, I was getting inducted into the National Junior Honor Society, which you did. I have like videotape of it because then I'm in the cafeteria and everybody's saying things to me on this camera because as soon as it's over, I get in my car and we drive away from Jackson, Mississippi, and I move to Texas and I never go back.
Wow.
And so I can't remember if this issue, which remember last time I was like, I feel this one very strongly. I don't know if I took it with me, if it's the last thing I got before I moved or the first thing I got upon arriving in Katy, Texas. Not the Katy, Texas where I would go to high school, but the Katy, Texas I would live for a short period of time to finish junior high.
Wow.
Yeah, there's more moves ahead.
Goodness gracious.
So
that's a lot.
We're really going to, it is a lot and I'm sorry, but I think there's no way I can get through this without you knowing. I must have read this one 100 times or something. The Johnny Depp poster is in it. Like it all clicked mm-hmm. like the end of Sixth Sense or something.
Yeah.
When I put that together. I had forgotten about the birthday party and I texted my friend whose band was playing in my backyard, my close friend still. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, wait, is this true? Like, was this the Honor Society? And then you got in the car or I got in the car and left. And he said, do you remember that I walked you out, that I got to skip class with you to take you to the office when your mom arrived and it was over the speaker. And then you handed me this is the part. He said, you gave me a key from a fire extinguisher that had fallen out of the fire extinguisher as we passed. As a goodbye charm. And I didn't remember that until he said it.
Sweet.
Could have been so beautiful. Could have been so right. I am not going to be good at this episode. Get out of my dreams.
What was going on in your pop culture life, Dave, April 88?
Just to mention, I think I saw that movie I mentioned up top about 3 times in the theater.
Yeah.
And we watched it recently and it mostly holds up. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Otho. You know, I think Otho and Bronson Pinchot from Beverly Hills Cop are sort of emblematic of gay characters in pop culture at that time. For the most part, that part not so great. And also, you know, Jeffrey Jones, Mira Young, Winona Ryder isn't a great picture these days. But otherwise, it's still a pretty good movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the special effects that they did hold up in a not holding up kind of way that is eternal. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
The Dennis Sucks movie? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Are none of us going to say it?
No, we can't. We've already mentioned it twice.
We can't.
I thought he was being kind to the sassy subscriber's heart about not mentioning the Dennis Sucks movie, but he's just trying to get me to say it a third time. Dave! Damn it. All right. Let's dive in.
Let's get into this issue, starting with What Now, which has been taken over by Christina Kelly, who would continue to write it forever from this point on. We'll do the pop culture topics first. I want to just talk briefly about the item on Madonna's acting career. She talks about Madonna is about to be in Bloodhounds of Broadway and in a play called Speed the Plow, a David Mamet play. And in the last issue, they were very focused on making sure that anytime they, you know, an actor can sing, they're like, don't worry, they're not going to make an album. And here they are being very judgmental about Madonna not trying to act. Now, do I think Madonna is good at acting? No. And she was even less good at this time. But they are a lot cattier about her trying to broaden her career into new fields than they are, for instance, in an item on the facing page about Adam Horovitz doing the exact same thing. Like, this misogyny. Come on now, guys. Leave Madonna alone.
He doesn't even sing. He talks.
Yeah. Yes. True.
Yeah. He talks rhymingly. They also call David Mamet, quote, the guy who wrote the play that inspired About Last Night. And that made me laugh.
So Bloodhounds of Broadway, which did not come out until November of the next year, sounds like it had a lot going for it on paper. It's a musical based on stories by Damon Runyon, the Guys and Dolls guy. Also in it, in addition to Matt Dillon, who they mentioned, there's Jennifer Grey. This is her first project post-Dirty Dancing. Rutger Hauer, Julie Haggerty, Alan Ruck, Fisher Stevens, Steve Buscemi, Randy Quaid, William S. Burroughs.
Wow.
And it was a giant flop. Budget $4 million, made less than $44,000. Wow. So, you know. It does still exist. You can buy or rent it, but it is not streaming anywhere for free. So Bloodhounds of Broadway, check it out. I don't know if you want.
That was Daggy.
We'll get to Daggy.
We can get to Daggy now if you want, because I feel like that is the definitive sassy slang that's stuck in my head forever.
Well, it's sassy glossary definition number one. And let me just read exactly what they write. Daggy rhymes with baggy, an Australian import.
Do your hair, Cynthia.
Adjective meaning nerdy, uncool, or out of it, as in, I think this polyester floral jumper is a little daggy, don't you? Daggier and daggiest are used to describe more extreme forms. Dag, the noun, refers to a daggy person, as in John Stamos is a dag. And so now from Urban Dictionary, a dag or dags is the colloquial term for the dung which collects and mats into the fleece immediately surrounding a sheep's anus. Hence the phrase rattle your dags. Therefore, to call someone daggy is to liken them directly to a neglected sheep's anal region suffering from this condition. Now, I think if people knew this, it would have caught on more.
Yeah, that's definitely, so much better.
Definitely would have caught on more.
That really elevates the word.
Right.
I kind of liked it just on the sassy description, but knowing that it's basically Klingons.
Well, it's like dingleberries of a sheep's butt. Yeah.
That reminds me. Oh, wait, hang on a sec. Starlog Jam. That reminds me of a Starlog Jam joke.
Great.
What is. Wait. Okay, here we go. Starlog Jam. What does the Starship Enterprise and toilet paper have in common? Hmm. They both circle Uranus looking for Klingons.
There you go.
Starlog
wow.
Jam.
Starlog Jam. Get out of my room!
But I have a question.
Yeah.
At this point in time, did society think that John Stamos was daggy? That seems like a bad example to me.
I think sassy readers were certainly given to understand that he was. He was a mass market guy.
I see. It's like, so he's daggy in the sense that he was like a sellout?
Well, he was like a soap star.
Okay. I was going to ask, what is he known for at this point?
At this point, he was like Blackie on whatever soap he was on.
Okay.
This is pre-Full House.
He was in the other teen magazines, probably more to the point.
Exactly. He was like a teen beat guy.
Got
he
it.
Was not a Robert Downey Jr. like cool crush object. He was, you know, very expected.
So this is just sassy staking their claim to a space.
Precisely.
Got it. Okay.
Yes.
Which I think the Madonna thing is as well, by the way.
Oh, right? For sure.
Yeah.
It's that plus internalized misogyny, I think.
Okay. Yeah, let's not let them off the hook. That's okay. That's okay.
Frisbee? They got a factoid about the origin of the Frisbee, which what place are they staking out there?
Yeah.
It's like, did you know that the Frisbee is named for the bakery that provided tin pies that the students at Yale threw around the 40s? Interesting. And, you know, youth, get on this factoid.
Did you know that? Are you saying it because everybody knows that?
I did know that. I did know that Frisbee was named after a bakery.
But if you, Starlog side, if you and I were stuck at a party watching doofs play Frisbee that they didn't invite us to, And then I started telling you the fun fact about Frisbees, which is the only thing I know about sports from my magazine.
Let me touch your stomach. There's the in. Frisbee no, talk.
You were being me. I wouldn't ask to touch your stomach. I would ask, is that your stomach? They're very different, Dave.
Okay. Please continue this hypothetical.
Anyway, I'm just asking, would you pretend that you didn't know, or would it be helpful? Because I have also always known this fun fact about the Frisbee, and perchance have thrown it out a couple of times.
Oh, my God. Wait, are you asking me if I would lie about knowing the Frisbee?
I don't know what I'm asking you anymore, Dave. Yes, I'm asking, would you follow the ruse?
Yeah.
Thank you. There's a section here, to beastie or not to beastie, about how Adam Horowitz is about to play a messed up kid in a new movie with Donald Sutherland playing his psychiatrist. Think maybe he was typecast, they ask. This movie was called Lost Angels, and I had the poster on my wall next to this Johnny Depp poster.
I didn't remember this movie existing at all.
I watched it a lot, and when I started watching it again on the internet, I almost watched the whole thing again because it turns out it was real formidable. To young Pam, young lonely Pam, alone in Texas. It is about, according to the internet, Tim Doolin. So we heard this little clip from him this morning. That's how long ago we started taping this. You guys are like, and your time is up. That'll be $1.75, please. Tim Doolin is a troubled Los Angeles teen with a history of mischievous, sometimes criminal behavior. His self-centered parents are too preoccupied with their own personal problems to help. After he clashes with the police, Tim's parents send him to a juvenile detention facility, dun-dun-dun, where he's treated like a dangerous prisoner. There he meets Dr. Charles Loftus, Donald Sutherland, a dedicated psychologist who fights back against the rigid institution and tries to help Tim. This is everything you want in a movie when you're 13 and curious about Los Angeles and gangs and institutions and after-school specials and good music and a Beastie Boy and, like, monologues that call everyone assholes. It was... I devoured it 100 times. You know, and then this issue is like from Austin to L.A. It's all here. It's Grease. This movie is Grease meets The Outsiders, meets The Warriors, meets Partnership for a Drug-Free America. And I'm still here for it.
It sounds like the junior Dennis Leary starter kit, the way you just described it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Amy Lo Kane is in it, and I love her. Mm-hmm. Scott Coffey is in it. He's a very important part of, like, Pam's relationship to John Hughes films. There's a character named Natas, and it's like the first time you realize Satan spelled backwards is a thing. And Starlog question. Why do boys hit door jams when they cross and they're leaving a cafeteria? Why do some boys, maybe tall girls, I just only notice tall boys, jump and hit the doorway?
I think it's a sports thing. It's a star jock. Star jock question.
Star jock. All right. Star jocks out there, if you're someone who still has to hit a door frame when you walk by, will you tell me, are you trying to scare me? Or are you offering to get the cereal from the high shelf later when I need you?
Maybe they're all OSHA inspectors. They're just like, load-bearing door.
Anyway, Lost Angels. It's the word Los Angeles. It's the words Los Angeles, but with a T spray painted for the lost, and then the E spray painted out for the angels. And
so edgy.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, man. It's fucking fast, dude. Put him in a body
It's on
bag.
YouTube. So we'll link it in the show notes if you want to experience this yourself.
Yes, let's live watch it together, you guys. Like, I'm in. Let's do it.
All right, let's move on to the non-pop culture items in What Now? We already talked about Daggy. Pam, what's next?
Oh, we have condoms. Oh, we have condoms. I don't know what my condom voice is. Oh, we have condoms. Oh, look, my guys, word. A condom update. Oh, my word. But I think I only really put it on here because it's just another, like, sassy. It's like STDs and yeast infections and latex. It's like just all the words about condoms.
Can I tell you what that voice was, Bam?
Yes.
It's the same voice when you haven't seen macaroons for a while and you're like, ew, macaroons. I love those.
I couldn't possibly.
Tennis. I don't even play anymore. yeah, I think all of these little what nows lived in my head. And I would tell you at a party that Frisbees were invented by empty pie tins. And then did you know that latex, non-latex condoms are made of sheep intestines?
Right. Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah.
Did you know armadillos can give you leprosy? Are those Doritos? Is that your stomach? My boyfriend is an imaginary Johnny Depp. Did you know if you add a T and remove an E from Los Angeles, you get Los Angeles?
Have a macaroon.
Have a macaroon. I haven't seen it in ages.
Moving on to Watch It, this month's movie reviews, and go straight to Hairspray. Whee! One of your gentler John Waters movies, I would say a spectacular showcase for one Ricky Lake. Later, when it was turned into a proper musical, launching pad for plus-size triple threat performers who do not usually get the opportunity to play leads. So it was important for that reason, too. And I hope that its many adaptations have made John Waters very wealthy. Someone that Pam has met.
Yes, I did. Are you going to put it in the show notes? Because I sent you the picture.
If you want.
Sure, go right ahead. I stood in line at Amoeba Records for this picture. You could have I think it was a prom. I can't remember if it was Valentine's or prom right now. I don't know. It doesn't matter. John Waters forever. Thank you, John Waters. Without him, I would be a third of me for sure. And I do remember watching Hairspray and being like, everything is different now. Like this movie changes my concept of everything.
I can't believe, Tara, you didn't mention this being, you know, the editor, but kind of poor form to say, I've seen this director's other movies, blah, blah, blah. And then she never, the words John Waters is not on this page at all. So I'm saying, and that is Jane that wrote that. So bad form, Jane, should have put John Waters' name in there.
Then we have Dominic in Eugene. I remember renting this. I remember riding my bike to rent this movie at the video store. The titular characters are twins, but Dominic, who is played by Tom Hulse, had an accident when they were kids, and now he works as a garbage man so that he can pay for Eugene, played by Ray Liotta, to go to medical school. Because in the 80s, those two things would like balance out economically. Crazy to think about. I thought it was very emotional and wrenching when I was 15. I'm sure it has aged very, very badly. Mm-hmm. It does also not exist in any streamable form. But the guy who wrote it, Corey Bleckman, previously wrote Bill on His Own, which was also about a person with an intellectual disability. It starred Mickey Rooney and Dennis Quaid. It is apparently not good. They talked about it on Quaid in Full, the podcast. We'll link it in the show notes. But this guy also went on to write Free Willy and its sequel. So speaking of someone who has a lot of money, that guy.
I remember, I think I had this taped. I think I had Dominic Eugene on a VHS tape with my like handwriting on the spine. And yes, I remember watching it more than once and it being very after school specially. But I wrote down, what if not Rain Man? Like it's the same year I looked it up. So I think this one just was like, what are you going to do? Like they were like, fuck, have you seen Rain Man?
Yeah.
We're screwed. Scene by scene, we're screwed. So yeah. I think that's what happened here. It sure is some old school is the kind way I'll put it. Some old school way of talking about people with needs and some differences. And it's not kind to, but it's like, you know, it's back when, what a good actor to act like this. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that sketch from Mr. Show, the so brave.
Yes, so brave. Yes. Yes. Then we have Stand and Deliver, which, again, look, I don't know. It was just an important issue of my life. But my calculus teacher was basically did Stand and Deliver. Like, he wouldn't let us take the ABBC calculus test. And it was clearly because of Stand and Deliver. He did the same speech at the beginning of class, and it made us all like we were afraid. And then we had an honor roll homework system. It doesn't matter. The point is, I begged him. I said, listen, I'm going to fail this. I've never been bad at any math in my life. And I don't understand what's happening here. I was like, my parents tried to ground me. And I was like, you can't make me feel any worse than I currently feel about my calculus grade and my progress report. And and I begged him. And he said, in this class, we take the BCAP calculus. And I fucking failed that thing. Just like I knew I would. There was no. And even when I was taking the test, I was like, I've seen Stand and Deliver. I know math is cool. I know this. I will summon Edward James almost. And I will like, I'll just do it. I'll just win. Because in the movie, you win. You just when the chips are down. Fucking failed that test. It's the worst thing I've ever done on anything. Any test, I've never failed anything as poorly as that. They were, oh, God.
My lowest grade in high school is for typing class. I almost failed, but not quite.
It's all right. You changed it to an A, though, right? Uh-huh. Yeah, just typed right over.
I think by that time, my parents stopped checking my grades. So
wow.
I almost failed home ec because I never learned to sew.
Wow, really? I did really good in home ec. I got like 88 in home ec.
I could never figure out how to thread the bobbin. And so the final project in sewing was you had to make a pair of you had to make something out of sweat material, like fleece. And so I never sewed the elastic waistband properly. I just tied it and like looped it around and thought my teacher wouldn't notice. And she gave me a pity pass.
I got a 88 in home ec, but like a really low grade in shop class. And I remember being terrified of shop class. Because that's where all the smokers went.
Yeah.
But also, the teacher was like, you know, there's a jigsaw in the shop and there's like all these things that can kill you. And one of the things is the torch, you know, the saline
acetylene, I think.
Torch. And he's like, all right, you have to turn this knob and this knob, but this one's a little finicky. And if you hear a pop, it might explode. All right, have good fun. I'm like, oh my God, what is happening? And like, I don't know if he was joking to this day or whether it really was flaky. And once in a while, there was a pop and like all the nerds in the class just like turned white instantly. And were like, I have to find a reason to get out of this class. And it was terrifying. And I think the only thing, literally the only thing I ever made in that class that actually got to the final was like acrylic ashtray where you just melted it and stuck it between some pegs. And I took it home. Here, Mom, hope you smoke some more. Here's your gift. But I hated shop class so much.
We probably all did make a lot of ashtrays. That is interesting. Like, well, most parents need one.
Yeah, what do they do now?
I think maybe they're planters. It's the same thing. You just put a plant in it instead of your cigarette.
It's true. True. Yeah.
I know I was just talking about Mr. Chandler, but I have a clip here from Stand and Deliver, which is now you can know what it, if you haven't seen Stand and Deliver, I feel like just do it. Like, how could it not hold up? How could it not hold up? It lives at the top of my heart.
Orelli, I'm a tough guy. Tough guys don't do math. Tough guys deep fried chicken for a living. But Orelli, you want a wing or a leg, man?
Oh, underdog stories. Love it. I mean, I guess I'll find out now if it's wrong for me to have considered Stand and Deliver to be one of my, this is why I love teacher movies.
Mm.
Not the teacher, not like Hot for Teacher, not like Don't Stand So Close to Me. I just mean like teachers as a whole. Teachers are the best. Okay. Let's move on.
Then their bomb for the month is She's Having a Baby. This is an Elizabeth McGovern, Kevin Bacon movie written and directed by John Hughes, proving he could do things that teens were not in. And it's also a movie about a writer, so I guess we should assume it's loosely based on his real life, probably. This is another one I remember thinking was really clever at the time, and I've watched it a lot. This is one I also Pam taped from TV. But looking back on it now, it's really misogynistic. Like, the main guy is such a pig, but also the wife, like, stops taking her birth control pill months before she tells him, which is not okay. But Alec Baldwin is also in it as the friend who tries to fuck the wife. and truly, like, this is in the hottest, his hottest era. It's like the hot corridor for Alec Baldwin, like this Working Girl, Prelude to a Kiss, hot time for Alec Baldwin. That other movie we're not going to mention, also a very good soundtrack. But over the closing credits, there's a montage of like actors from the movie and other people that John Hughes could call in favors from, suggesting names for the baby, which is cute. And one of the only memorable parts of the movie, which critics hated and was not as big a flop as Bloodhounds of Broadway, but did not make back its budget. So I clipped a little bit of that. Dave, you can play that.
Linus.
Roscoe.
Kerwin.
Kiyoshi Yamamoto.
Patrick.
How about Little Suck?
Dashiell.
Fred.
Orby Lee.
Jasper.
Jazz.
Guido.
Horatio.
Baby Maggie.
Who wouldn't love that?
Everybody would.
I would.
What about you?
Spike.
Adolf.
Chris.
Mark.
Mucus.
That was Ted Danson and Woody Harrelson at the end.
You should check baby books from 5 years from 88 and see how many of these names grace the top 20.
Like, yeah. That's what I'm going to name my baby.
I didn't see this movie until I was much older. I don't know how. I guess because I just didn't listen to watch the movies I wasn't supposed to watch. And this feels, isn't, doesn't he hold up like a pair of panties and then like fat wife pregnant panties or so? That's all I really remember.
Yes.
I said.
Full panties good. Big panties. Boo. Oh,
yes. I fucked her into an elephant. Like, yeah, I feel like I didn't watch it for that. It was not marketing well for me. So let's move over to Listen Up. Almost every single one is given 1 or 2 stars. Like, they obviously were like, let's shit on things this month. I don't even understand. It starts with Robin Hitchcock's Globe of Frogs, which it gives 5 stars to. And this will be the first time I'm aware of the concept of Robin Hitchcock or Globe of Frogs. House of Frogs. Mm-hmm. That House of Frogs. Did you know about Robin Hitchcock?
I had heard the name. That was not an artist whose music I have ever purchased.
Yeah, I think when I was listening to it, I think if I had heard it back then, I probably would have pretended to be into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a safe thing to pretend you care about on cool points, right? Not that I did that all the time, but that just seems like when we're like, yeah. They're like obscure. I don't listen to it. It's hard to get, but like they're cool. Mm-hmm. And then it whiplashes right into James Taylor's Never Die Young. Is that...
This is Dave doing a bit.
Well, that's the cover. It's. I was like, is there a song about the cover? And is that it? I would completely buy that one of the songs starts this way.
Well, I mean, you can play a bit of the one that I did clip, because when I started to listen to it, I involuntarily started frowning and was like, oh, well, this has to be the one that we play.
James Taylor's Never Die Young, which has some, yes, wolves on the cover. Sweet Baby James was a staple around my house when I was growing up, but not as much as Carole King's Tapestry. But I got the sense that James Taylor maybe broke Carole King's heart. And so he was just like not a nice, like you didn't love him in my house.
Right.
And I don't know, but I did love him once Running on Empty came out. And that movie is very important. And that,
sure.
Fire and Rain is very important. So that's all. That's my...
Yeah, but what is James Taylor doing in the sassy review section, though, seriously?
That's a great question. That's a great question. It's like, they were like, oh, you're in case... You know what it is? It's in case your parents pick this up, because they hear this book. This magazine has stuff about masturbating and STDs and virgins. And you're like, Mom, you listen to this record. They're reviewing your stuff, too.
Like, a teen would put a James Taylor, like, you would put a Fire and Rain on a mixtape. Like,
sure,
you
sure.
might be curious to know what this guy is doing now. And then you would read this review and go, oh, I don't care. Never mind.
My period just started. Thanks, Dave. It's a full moon in my uterine lining. And it also says, this is it. It's in your mom's collection if she's cool. I just feel like every once in a while, Sassy drops a little thing to be like, it's okay, moms. If you have this magazine in your life, it's because you're a cool mom.
Never heard of this band before, and I really have nothing to say about it except that this is not the vibe that I would expect to hear from House of Freaks. Yeah. When you see that band name, you expect the music to sound like Insane Clown Posse, not like this. It's just like totally middle of the road, like jangly guitar pop. It's just a real disconnect. That's all.
It's true. I was waiting for like every day is Halloween or something. Yes, it was not. It was not at all. Or even House of Freaks in full effect, y'all. It was none of it. And Monkey on a Chain Gang. Like, where are the Pixies? Something. No, they didn't like it either. But it was it was like if Toad the Wet Sprocket was bad.
I wouldn't even go that far. I thought this was fine.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It was fine. It was fine. If Toad the Wet Sprocket was not life-changing.
It's not memorable, but it's not bad. If it came on at a party, you wouldn't be mad at it.
Right.
It'd be more like if Toad the Wet Sprocket turned out to be chamber music.
Yes, exactly.
I have another editor's note, Tara. You failed us again on House of Freaks. They mentioned the cover art and how terrible it was in the review. And yet, it's not one of the albums they put on the page. Bad form. Once again, it is. Jane.
Sloppy.
Sloppy.
Sloppy copy.
So that's a little bit of Dweezil Zappa. Another review from Elizabeth. The album's called My Guitar Wants to Kill Your Mama. She was expecting something funny because his sister Moon Unit's song, Valley Girl, which Moon Unit is credited with co-writing, but she was 14 at the time. I think we may safely say Frank Zappa probably did most of the heavy lifting songwriting-wise.
Oh, and I don't know.
That's okay, fair
that's
enough.
It's me sticking but up for young girls. Tara, whatever. That's not very sassy of you.
I got a data point to maybe back up, Tara.
Okay.
Which is we saw Moon Unit once at Uncabaret in L.A. and woo, stinky.
Yeah.
Not good. Not good at improvising. Not good at whatever she brought to the table. It was bad.
Did not seem especially witty, but regardless, it seems weird to hold it against Dweezil Zappa that the album on which he either wrote or co-wrote every track, and I checked, did not have more gimmick novelty songs. Like, I wanted it to be this other thing that I had no reason to think it would be as a weird review. But, you know, Elizabeth also wrote the not especially probing Moonstruck review and the review of Madonna's remix album that complained there wasn't any new material. So what we might be learning is that she's not great at criticism. But I will also say, as we heard in that clip, that's like 7/4 time. Like, her complaint that this is just a vehicle for a lot of very off-putting guitar solos, is not wrong. Like, this is not music that invites you to engage with it. That time signature is very remote. Let's say that.
So George Thorogood and the Destroyers. So George Thorogood and the Destroyers, the rural juror of this month's Listen Up, Born to be Bad. I kind of remember George Thorogood and Destroyers. This seems, again, like just like we got they had 12 tapes for a penny and decided to shit on the following five. But I was really happy to get this because in making my mixtape, I made you a mixtape, links in the show notes. I was looking for something from this album. And I solved a lifelong mystery. One night doing karaoke with my friends at the Karaoke Cove, as it was called in Austin, which was part of a hotel, like a Roadway Inn. It was a Chinese restaurant and nobody knew about this karaoke place and we would own it 4 nights a week. It was the best. Anyway, the guests would often watch us sing and sometimes there were regulars, but sometimes people were very, very drunk and very interested in our singing. And one night a dude just started calling to us, "Can you play? Can you sing? Well," and then you go, "Can you?" It's, you know, that song, it goes, "Well," and then he was like, "You know," It goes way, and we're all standing on the stage like, I need one more word, or who sings it, or something. Way. And so for years, we would say this to each other for karaoke, like, you know what, you should play, way. And it would be just like what you would shout when you had nothing, but you were drunk. It was a precursor to Dear Lips. Dave, hit play. Listen to what's here.
Will.
Chewy, Matt, Becca, all the monks. The Cure. This is the song. This is Will. Oh, it feels so good to put that last piece of the puzzle in. Play it again.
Will.
Feel terrible. That's exactly what that dude was doing. Like 100%. It was a spot on. We mocked that drunk cowboy and he couldn't have been writer. That's what he was singing.
What if that guy actually was George Thorogood?
He would have been. That had not occurred to me. Well, George should have known more than one syllable to his body of
work.
That
was enough, he thought. It's a signature thing, you know?
Yeah, we were supposed to. That song is supposed to make us all go, don't, like we Sweet Caroline right into that. But I did not.
So in case anyone is trying to sing that at karaoke, it's called I Really Like Girls.
That's even better. They couldn't remember it was called I Really Like Girls. You know that song. It goes... Wait. Yeah, that's that. And then they give one star to Twisted Sister's Love Is for Suckers. And again, I think this is just like, they're just walking by being like, whatever your brother likes is shit. Because, Twisted Sister is Twisted Sister. All the way. Like, they really were like, yeah, this is our thing. We're going to do it over and over again. If you like it, here it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Admittedly, this was like probably the wind down of their career, but still.
Yeah.
It's still strong.
When you play Twisted Sister, you're transported. And you cannot say that about the fucking House of Freaks. That's for sure. I don't know why I'm so defensive about the hair bands, but it just seems like they don't like they're mad at anybody with mousse, like from Madonna to Dee Snider to Tiffany.
That's true.
I don't know what it is.
Twisted Sister's greatest moment, the release of We're Not Going to Take It, or their appearance in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Big Adventure.
Thank you. That is the correct answer.
Yeah. I was going to say it before you gave it to me as an option. Whatever your answer was. Bam, bing, ba, boom. I don't know what that tag is that I get. Pam points.
Will.
Yeah, that's a Pam point. Tara, Dave, had you guys ever, like, were you people who watched Matt Adler act in your past?
Nope. I'd never heard of him before.
Never heard of this gentleman. But then it turns out I was like, oh yeah, no, I mean, I guess I know what he is. But I never watched his big giant movies. Or if I did, I was watching them to watch someone else. I don't know. I know I've never seen North.
Yeah.
I know I've never seen North Shore, but I definitely saw Whitewater Summer because I was very, very, very into Kevin Bacon.
Sure.
In a pre-Johnny Depp way, like psychically linked. Mm-hmm. I loved him. He helped me through many grades. But almost hit his wife with a car once. And then I was like, oh, I almost hit Kara Sedgwick with a car. And the person in the car next to me was like, why are you so happy? And I was like, because that means I'm about to see. And then there's Kevin Bacon hitting the roof of my car and looking at me going, what the fuck? And I was like, it's all happening. It's happening.
And that's our story about Matt Adler.
I told you I was going to be a terrible person this episode. I'm so sorry. Matt Adler is currently married to Laura San Giacomo.
Oh, mm-hmm. From Quigley Down Under. That one?
Yes.
Yeah. And Quigley Down Under's Laura San Giacomo?
Yes.
Isn't she in the isn't that her in the sitcom about the magazine?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
just she's in Quigley Down Under. That's all you need to know.
Well,
what are people going to know? Quigley Down Under or Joe Shuby? It's got to be Quig.
Well, one was a little daggier than the other, but.
Oh, boy. All right. Let's move on to our first feature. How Tiffany Ruined My Weekend! Exclamation mark by Karen Catchpole. So let me explain, although it's pretty obvious by the name, but for people who are not in the writing industry or the magazine industry, what a write-around is. A write-around is a profile where you do not have the participation of the profile subject. So you have to do it basically by researching past interviews that they have done and piece it together as like kind of a Franken profile. You have to do a lot more research. You have to like fake it to kind of fudge that this person actually talked to you. Here's what a write around is not. This article, more than half of which is a blow by blow of the hassle of connecting or not connecting with the subject. And I grant, I'm sure it was annoying that like you had a time to talk to her on the phone and she wasn't available. And then you're supposed to go to the airport and talk to her. But when you get there, like the times you were told are not correct and she's already gotten on the plane and then she's in Europe and you're missing her on the phone for a whole day, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure that's all really annoying. But like Tiffany at this point is 16. Like, she's on tour. Her schedule is probably changing on an hourly basis. I mean, I do think it's weird that the subject would not only choose an in-person interview over a phone or given the circumstances that everyone's working with, but if she, or more likely her PR team, is like worried about her being handled properly, they may have more control of that if they can be present with the journalist, and or the journalist might be nicer to her if she has to like look Tiffany in the face and relate to her as what she is, which is a young, vulnerable girl. And as it is, because of all the hassles, when they finally do talk for 10 minutes, Karen's first question is extremely combative. Your first album had a lot of covers. Will your second be a little more original? Like, oh my God, oh, bitchy. I remember this article so well. It's like one of the more legendarily like super sassy articles of like, this is why Sassy hated Tiffany and continued to hate her. And like, there will continue to be jabs at her through the rest of the run of the magazine. And it starts here. It's so over the top and clearly coming from people that just don't understand, like, you're going to need to have access to people in the future, and it does not befit you. It doesn't make you look better to handle this in this way.
Counterpoint. That was a pretty fun read.
Okay.
I mean, maybe she was. Okay. Here's my theory.
Go ahead.
Karen Catchpole.
Yeah.
Was mad because when she found out that she was going to interview him person, she had that zinger set up, like when nobody else is in the room, she can say, I think we're alone now. And that would be the start of her article, and it was gonna be great. But then this whole thing happened, she was mad. I don't know, guys. I think Spike gets things done. And I think for me, like based on what I know about Sassy, this seems right. Like I feel like if this happened to one of you guys when we were in our mid-20s writing Television Without Pity,
absolutely,
the article would have been similar.
100%. I'm not saying that I don't understand how this happened. I'm saying as someone in my 40s, like, this doesn't look great.
No, it doesn't. But I'm saying it makes for a good article. And it's like, if you were talking about staking claims to tone, yes, and mm-hmm, things that make you different.
Yeah.
This does it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't give a shit about Tiffany.
Well, then mission accomplished by Sassy.
I mean, but frankly, also on the flip side, that was pretty unprofessional string of events that happened there. Like, obviously, her manager wasn't communicating with Tiffany.
Right.
Like, it really seemed like every time that Karen got a hold of Brenda, the PR agent, that she was like, oh, yeah, I totally forgot to do anything about that. She's at the airport now and just like, you know, whatever. She's not going to go anyways. But she went and the plane's already gone. It was a shit show.
Well, what probably actually happened was that Sassy did not exist at the point that this was all arranged. So they get pushed down, like you mm-hmm. talk to Rolling Stone first, you talk right. to 17 first, you talk to the New York Times first, and then Sassy's at like the bottom of the priority list for that reason.
Yep.
Let me just like try to circle what you guys are both saying in where I went.
Are you saying you're going to sum things up? You're going to synthesize?
Well...
Yeah, sit back, because I went down a weird little deep dive here. So I watched the Billie Eilish documentary 1.5 times. And that is sort of the opposite of this Tiffany article of like the person is completely not there as the subject. And young artists these days seem to be more in control of their own narrative. Now, granted, her parents, basically, I read that they found RJ Cutler and said, maybe we make this. We have all this footage already. They were already taking. They grew up, you know, filming themselves. It's just interesting to watch young artists now have an understanding of that the internet is forever. Yeah. The attention span is short, but the memory is forever. And I can control my narrative. What I remembered in the middle of this was real prime recap time. Fiona has wings, and Fiona Apple giving the speech about this industry is bullshit, but she called it this world. And so it got really complicated. Yeah. And that made me Google Fiona has wings. And I found a YouTube documentary called Fiona has wings. And what I can't tell is if it's a real documentary or not a documentary, or I found something, but it's basically a doc around because it's like a, I can't tell if it's a fan made or what. Of course I didn't know at the beginning, but by 15 minutes in, it is just her press clippings, her press speeches, and then like found video with no cuts in between. And her basically saying, I want to be able to show people my mistakes. I think this is a messy, weird life, and I didn't really mean for all of this to happen. And it's like, it's just so interesting to me to go from, you don't have access to Tiffany, so we hate her, to I have so much access to Billie Eilish and Taylor Swift because they've invited me in, that I love her, and now I'm protective of her.
Yes.
It's and Fiona was like right in the middle there of like trying to speak that way made people hate her. Like, get back in the box, go back to the mall. Just like, don't talk to me about your young female truth. It's just interesting to me. And I suppose it's all like the treatment of a young white female teen girl. You know, you're either an Avril Lavigne or a Britney, and then the, you know, save Britney-ness of it all. Like, there's some women that we still just keep doing it to, no matter what age they are. So I agree with Dave. Like, it was good dish, and it reminded me of how we talked about our teen idols. But I'm so grateful that we do it differently, and that the difference seems to be the power of agency, of saying, well, it's actually me that's going to direct this. It's actually me who's going to, you know, give the answer. And I don't need it to go through 9 people to get approved first. Dave, I think that Karen Catchpole might have been so shitty to Tiffany because she was jealous of Christina Kelly, who got the other assignment, which was That's Me on TV with Johnny Depp. So instead of chasing PR people and airport gates, Christina got to go be on 21 Jump Street, you guys.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Fair.
Yeah, pretty cool.
If you were asked, Pam, how excited would have you been at the time? Like, what would have happened? What would be like your day after being invited to go up to Vancouver?
That was more question than I was
ready.
Here's what I wrote. Here's what I wrote. This is what I'm prepared. I have prepared a statement for this time.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I will not be taking any further questions. I am genuinely elated as I read about the contents of her missing suitcase. Yes, this article, I remember like erotica. This article, I went into puberty reading this article. So I was very, very, very into 21 Jump Street. I taped all of it. I cut all the ads out of the TV guide, and I had a scrapbook of 21 Jump Street.
Oh,
I
am
not done. Had all the soundtracks. Would go find the bands because each band had like their episodes. How I discovered the B-52s, and I probably liked good REM. Johnny Depp also moved around a lot, and I hadn't really experienced someone that I had looked up to or that I thought was kind of fascinating. And like I said, he's like a horse. Like he's just a dark, I'm closing my eyes so I can't see your reaction to this. But he was, I mean, before he had 108 scarves, he had 2 very thoughtful jaw muscles that would move. And then his forehead, I learned how to wiggle my ears because I saw Johnny Depp do it. This is so embarrassing. So on an episode of 21 Jump Street, Johnny Depp reacts to a sentence someone says and his hairline moves. And I realized, oh, there's a muscle behind your ear. And that's how you move your ears. And that is how I taught myself to wiggle my ears. Thank you, wow. 21 Jump Street. So this is an early version of Johnny Depp here. This is pre-Crybaby when he was still very crafted for us. And I didn't have to read the article. Like, I was like, that's Sal Janko. That's his best friend, Sal Janko. And they're in Vancouver where the chapel is. Like, I didn't need to read it. Mindy Cohn is in here just with, like, her legs on Johnny Depp. Like, everything in here that, like, Natalie from the Facts of Life gets to hang with Johnny Depp. Do you see that everything was like, Pam, one day it'll happen to you because you believe in him. How could it not happen? I don't even have a Kevin Bacon's car crash story about Johnny Depp. I have lived near him a lot and been in his offices once, but he wasn't there and he'll never be because I think someone alerted him to me sometime about 20 years ago. And I've been in the same building as him twice. He's very far away and small and it doesn't matter. The point is, if I had won a chance to be this Christina Kelly and do an article, it would have come out probably just like this. Like, I would have lost my suitcase, would have been lost. I would have mentioned that I had flaming fuchsia lipstick. It would have been a lot about how, what it's like to be an extra and how intimidated I am and how I accidentally thought his stand-in was him. And I was disappointed in him until I realized it wasn't him. And then once I saw him, I knew it was the real him because there he was with his cheekbones. And I probably would have said to him, "You're why I know how to wiggle my ears." Anyway, I will not be opening the poster today. He got his start acting because of Nicolas Cage, who was like, you know what you should do? You should audition for a movie. And he did. And that was Nightmare on Elm Street. And that's why he's an actor, because he was a musician. He had a band called The Kids. One time I went to see Johnny Depp's band, P, in Austin. I went to Emo's on 6th Street and I walked in and there was nobody there. And I was like, how come nobody knows I'm here to see Johnny Depp's secret band P? And I stood there in an empty Emo's for a long, long time. It was like a 4 o'clock in the afternoon thing. It was sunny outside, which is weird. And then finally,
the show was at 11:30.
The show was probably at 11. I just wanted a good seat. There were no seats. I wanted a good urine puddle. And then, so I went to the doorman finally, because I was like, if I'm going to buy some water, And I said, what time will Johnny Depp be performing tonight with Pete? Like, I tried to find a secret way to say it and there wasn't one. Mm-hmm. And that dude, I remember like yesterday, just goes, this is the band P. And he spells with his finger, P-E-E. You want the band P. And he just spells the letter P. And he goes, Johnny Depp will not be here. And I was like, thanks. I will not be opening the poster today. No further questions. Do you have some thoughts on this article, Tara? Do you have some links to share?
The article in the episode that Christina was an extra in is called Chapel of Love, and I watched it. It's on Peacock. We'll link it in the show notes. It's a Valentine's Day episode, so they're playing poker at the chapel. That's what it's called, all work.
Yes.
And they're each telling the story of their worst Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. And Hansen's, is that his name?
Tom Hansen.
Tom Hansen, Tommy. The Johnny Depp character. Mm-hmm. His is that he went to a Valentine's Day dance when he was in high school, which, of course, because he's much older than he looks, is in the 70s. And the tuxedo they put him in, the widest pants you ever did see. He could be smuggling multiple raccoons around his ankles, the size these pants are.
It was a good baggy suit.
It's a very baggy suit. I mean, the top part of it fits, but yeah, really billowy ankles. And he kisses a girl and blah, blah, blah. And then it turns out this happened to be the day that his dad, who was a police officer also, gets killed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's very sad about it. But this, the funny thing watching it, this was only the second episode of 21 Jump Street that I had ever watched in full. You can tell even in like toward the end of season two, he is visibly bored by the show. Like he does not want to be doing it. And you can tell while you watch him, which is funny.
You've only seen two episodes of 21 Jump Street?
Sorry.
What's the other one?
It's true. The one with Jason Priestley, the first season finale.
Okay. Pam, this is the one that starts with No Good Nicks spray painting graffiti on a wall. And they say something like, we've got something
friendly
about
neighbors or something.
Yeah, they spelled neighbors with a U because they're in Vancouver. Nobody thought to tell anybody.
I didn't watch this episode again because I was worried about more feelings, but I'm glad you did. And I can't believe you've only seen two episodes of 21 Jump Street, which so you never watched Booker. She says with incredulity.
I did not. I did scan through, especially looking in the dance scenes, because that's where Christina supposedly was, but I did not spot her.
Macaroon Booker.
You haven't watched Booker.
Booker, do you know what the difference is? What does the Enterprise and toilet paper have in common? They both circle Uranus looking for macaroons.
Spin-off with Richard Grieco. It was not as popular at the time. They thought, well, we won't need Johnny Depp when we have a Richard Grieco. And that turned out to not work out in their favor with a U.
Pam, what's your favorite Johnny Depp movie? And is it Nick of Time?
It is Crybaby.
Not Nick of Time?
Also with Amy Locaine. It is not Nick of Time. Nick of Time is the first one where I was like, oh no.
Nick of Time is fantastic.
It's really good.
It's a real time, like assassination, it's sort awful. Of, you know, regular guy gets sucked into something. And
and his name is Nick. That's why it's called Nick of Time.
Do you enjoy watching 60 Minutes and when they go to commercials, you're like, oh, that's the minute that we're actually at right now as we're going like really 60 minutes. That is what Nick of Time is like.
And Nick of Time has the same like story mechanism twice in one movie. He goes back to the shoeshine guy twice and does the exact same thing. Like they couldn't think of a different way to do it the second time. Like, he just goes back. Just do it twice. Just do it. Nick of Time. I'm Nick. Nick of Time's great. You got to watch it. It's a fantastically shitty movie.
Oh my God. Crybaby's so good. Crybaby.
I may have never seen it.
The dance person in me is so excited for you, Tara, because you said you like Hairspray, right? And all its forms?
I do. Yeah. Yes.
And do you like Amy Locaine like I do? Maybe you don't because you've never seen Lost Angels or Crybaby.
She's fine. She was in season one of Melrose Place.
Yeah, I never saw that.
For a while.
Oh my gosh. If you watch Crybaby, I know every word.
Dave, did you have anything to add about this article?
No.
You didn't even look up Lord Bing High School or Lord Bing, the guy? He was a World War I hero.
No, I prefer Lord Google.
Boo. Next time, we're talking about fashion. We're trying monochromatic makeup. We're wearing florals and white tights. And we're going to the prom. For my plug this week, four Generation X girls had Sassy, we had Punky Brewster, and now she's back in a revival series on Peacock. I reviewed it for Primetimer.com, and you can find that link in the show notes.
If you've been listening to this and you're like, Pam, wow, how fucked up does it get with your boyfriends? Well, I have a graphic novel called My Boyfriend is a Bear, and if you haven't read it, you might like it if you're still tolerating me at this point. It came out from Oni Press. I love it very much. It is about a girl in Los Angeles who dates a 400-pound American black bear. And I'm currently working on turning it into a film. So buy the book. It helps. And you can follow Tara on Twitter or Instagram at Tara Ariano. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Pamela Ribbon. I think you guys give me this one just so I can do the ads. Please rate and review us on the podcast app of your choice to help other listeners find us. And thank you to those of you who've been calling and writing in. We love every single one of you.
Yes.
You can also call us. The hotline is, of course, 720-SASSY-GO. Leave us a voicemail about this episode, something in the magazine from this month. Anything your heart desires, we may play it on a future episode, that being 2 weeks from now. That's the hotline episode. Hotline. You can find more about the podcast, including visual aids for all our episodes. You want to see what those magazine pictures actually look like? Get to the visual aids. That plus contact info and everything else you need. The website is listentosassy.com. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for the April 88 fashion episode.
Have you watched Dominic and Eugene lately? Okay. Okay, listen. I have not opened the Johnny Depp poster in the middle of this thing. And I can't.
Pam, I'll send you mine because I don't care. I'll rip it out.
We're going to have to just... we're going to jump around a little bit because I also have seen 1.5 times since yesterday at 2:30 in the morning the Billie Eilish movie on Apple TV, The World's a Little Blurry. Mm-hmm. And it's that plus this plus maybe my period is coming. But I have a lot of feelings. And... I have a lot of complicated thoughts about Johnny Depp, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to say them today, and then Billie Eilish just, like, does it, talking about Justin Bieber in almost my exact what I was going to say here way.
Okay.
Which is that he and I had, a relationship. He was, like, a horse boy, you know, like, he was a mm-hmm. stepping stone toward what would become relationships in my life. And mm-hmm. I was alone, and I talked to Johnny Depp a lot because I'd moved. I had a 6-foot poster mm-hmm. over my bed. He was not just a teen crush. He was my best friend. He was my boyfriend. He helped me through tough mm-hmm. times.
Right.
And then, like all things in the world, you can't have a good thing that doesn't get ruined.
Right.
You can't. It's all going to get ruined. But I didn't know mm-hmm. that then. And, right. And a little, I'm just like, trying to not be defensive because it's not art versus the artist. It's like the person that you had in your head, the person that you were presented in the magazine versus mm-hmm. the person that they eventually grow up to become. And, you know, I can be disappointed, but I think I've been taking on shame about it. And you have sent me some really lovely Johnny Depp things in the mail to like pump me up for this. And each one comes to me like, your ex killed someone. Like, honestly, like, it feels...
No,
but I know you don't mean that. I know you genuinely mean, look, we're going to celebrate the thing. And I can't open it up because it feels like watching Bill Cosby himself or something like that and laughing at Dad is great. Like, I don't know where to put my retro shame.
I see.
Are you saying you want the cash equivalent of those presents?
No. Yeah. No, I've already resold them. The resale value was impressive.
Good.
No,
they
I
are.
Have them. I have no, they are. I have them all. And I know the love that you sent them with, and I can receive that yes. love. And then also recognize that I'm having a complicated feeling with diving back into my pure, honest, true love for this man who definitely mm-hmm. got me through puberty. And maybe yeah. is the reason I've had a lot of weird shit relationships after. But mm-hmm. I am only looking at the shadow of his neck right here. And I know how much I touched and kissed it. Like, I know that I counted the moles and freckles. I know that little cockroach around his neck is because he wanted to play... He wanted to play Gregor Samson in The Metamorphosis. I know that he's yeah. Jonathan Christopher Depp II, born in Owensboro, Kentucky. I know about Betty Sue, the tattoo of his mom. I know all of it, like yeah. Billie Eilish knows Justin Bieber. And I just want to say, we'll get to that later, but I don't know if I can, when, like, if I can open this poster, it will be like I've walked across hot coals and you're Tony Robbins.
I'm not trying to make you do anything.
Oh, I know that. I know that you would never. Okay. I'm telling you that I accept and receive the love in your heart. I am having such a weird feeling about diving into some of this stuff.
We should say the things that you're making it sound like I send you something weird. I no, just sent no, you just some sent old some old magazines from this era that yes. had Johnny Depp on the cover before and we knew he was a creep.
They're all just one Proust Madeleine after another, though. Like every time I see it, I remember all kinds of things like this, yeah. this surprise birthday party and stuff. Just things I had kind right. of blocked out or forgotten because, you know, I'm older. But I want to mm-hmm. say I love you so much. This is so sweet. And I know, I just, in case you don't see me like hold it up and lick it, it's just because I don't right. yet know how to celebrate it past gotcha. our love for each other.
Well, maybe we should move on to the next
one. I'm sorry. Let me get more complicated. Hey, let me talk about the Beastie Boys. I don't have a complicated relationship with their past or anything. Well, one more thing about Globe of Frogs, which is if I had known that there was a song called Tropical Flesh Mandala, like I would have dropped that into all conversations. That would have been on every mixtape I ever made. So I'm the one who missed out not knowing about Globe of Frogs, clearly.